Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I'm thrilled because today I have with us Dr. Randall Bell. For 15 years, Dr. Bell served as CEO of Landmark Research Group, LLC, specializing in real estate economics, valuation, litigation support, negotiation, and strategy. As a top economist and appraiser, Dr. Bell worked on hundreds of cases involving class action lawsuits, real estate fraud, statistical regressions, and other complex matters around some of the largest climate, environmental, terrorist cases in the history of the world. He's also on the advisory board of the Bureau of National Affairs in Washington, D.C. And 2020 says, an economist and appraiser, Randall Bell is the nation's foremost expert on damaged real estate. Randall, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Vicki. It's terrific to be with you.
Well, you know, I think what you've done is just amazing. So I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about that and how that led to your new number one international bestseller, Rich Habits, Rich Life.
Well, sure. I've been involved in damaged real estate in the 1990s, and that has really led to a very fascinating career that has taken me literally to all 50 states, all seven continents, working on cases like the World Trade Center and the BP oil spill and Hurricane Katrina and the Flight 93 crash sites, and of course some crime scenes everyone's heard of, the O.J. Simpson and John Benny Ramsey. And for decades, I've been working on these cases, and I thought, you know, this has really been a privilege to go to these places, meet the people behind the headlines, and work with them in trying to resolve the problems both economically and sociologically. And there's too much valuable information here to just put it on a shelf and retire. I've got to do something with the fact that I've had this privilege. So I've been working on this book literally for about 20 years, 25 years. And it's essentially my effort, putting on my sociological hat, to take the lessons that I've learned working on these cases and really bring a book out that addresses self-development issues. But it's not a bunch of cotton candy. It addresses the real difficult issues as well that people really have to face in trying to elevate and grow and prosper.
That is just so fantastic. And the subtitle of the book is The Four Cornerstones of All Great Pursuits. Can you tell us a little bit about what that entails?
Absolutely. I was looking for a model to try and summarize kind of a sense of balance. When I work on these cases, when I try to explain these own concepts to my own kids and so forth, and of course there's mind, body, and soul, and there's another model, egos, logos, and pathos, and there's another model of, you know, spiritual, physical, social, mental, something like that. And they all struck me as very, very good, but they weren't complete. I wanted to play the whole keyboard. And so I came up with a model, but it was complex, and even though I wrote it, I had trouble remembering it myself, and I really wanted to bring the elements down to being really simple. And I had a case out in Saipan and Guam, and I was, frankly, I was stuck there for 3 days. I just sat on the beach for 3 days thinking about how can I take this model that I have to kind of organize all this great information that I've been blessed with and make it accessible. I wanted a model that a kid could understand, but a CEO or one of my billionaire or multimillionaire clients that they would respect. And the answer kind of came to me in really nothing short of an epiphany of a four cornerstones. Just like any building has, you know, four cornerstones to keep it stable, a life or a business or any organization needs these four cornerstones. And it's very simple. It's four words: me, we, do, be. To summarize it, me habits are things that we do to improve our level of wisdom, intellectually, spiritually, and philosophically. So it's anything we do to build the me cornerstone is what information and what thoughts do I have in my mind to build my wisdom. And then the we cornerstone is what am I doing to build relationships as far as being a member of a team, culturally, communicating, what am I doing to build that cornerstone. And then the do cornerstone is productivity. It's what I'm doing to be productive financially, with my space, environmentally, and also physically, taking care of our health, our service, our products, those kinds of things are our do cornerstone habits. And then the final cornerstone, which really makes us unique from the rest of the animal kingdom, is the be cornerstone. Animals are doing the same thing they were doing 50 years ago when I went to the San Diego Zoo with my parents. But the be cornerstone makes us distinctly human because it's where we set goals, where we develop, where we manage our time, and where we create a legacy. So anything that we do to build a legacy is a be cornerstone type habit. So me, we, do, be are a quick summary of the four cornerstones.
That is so interesting. And what I really love about your book is that it combines like over 25 years of research and decades of your really unique and fascinating experience, but it's created a real user-friendly guide for people to live a very fulfilled life. And especially now in our world that's so chaotic, how do you hope readers will discover a way to maximize their chances to really get what they want in today's world?
That's a great question, Vicki, because when I study a disaster, and I think I'm safe to say that I've studied more disasters and been to more disasters around the globe than anybody in history, the first thing I do is assess the situation. And they're very complex, and they're very messy, and there's a lot of emotion. And oftentimes, there's not only a lot of emotion, there's lives at stake, lives that have been lost, and also oftentimes millions or billions of dollars. So they're very, very real. There's no time for a theory. We need practical results in these situations. And the first thing I do, which really surprises people, is I'm very quiet and I'm very observant. And what I'm doing is an assessment. That's the key word, is an assessment. And so what I'm trying to accomplish with this book is provide a really powerful assessment tool, me, we, do, be. Because if we're genuinely going to grow, if we're genuinely going to be elevating, and if we're really serious about developing ourselves and being in a better place a year from now than where we are today, it starts with an authentic assessment. And so Me, We, Do, Be is a very powerful assessment tool that, frankly, I use myself in all these cases. It's not as if I'm writing a book on one thing and I have, you know, a secret set of methodologies in my back pocket that I use in my other work. This is it. These are the cornerstones used in my assessment of the World Trade Center and the Flight 93 crash site and other very complex situations. And that is the power. You hit the key word, simplicity. It has to be simple or it doesn't get used. You know, with word processing, anybody can write a 5,000-page book and go on and on and on, but it takes a real effort to bring it down and make it understood. And Me, We, Do, Be, I think, is the quintessential assessment tool if people are really serious about assessing their business, assessing their life, assessing their family, and seeing what areas they need to focus on to really grow.
I was just wondering if you had any challenges with being able to do that, because you have had so much experience. I mean, it's so wide and it's so deep, and being able to determine what to include, because, you know, you're looking at probably 10 books here if you were looking at your whole life. So was that at all a challenge for you in narrowing it down to simple terms?
That was the challenge, Vicki. That was the challenge because I have literally a enormous library of my own notes, photographs, journals from these various cases, and there are hundreds of them. I'm continually working on them even today. So trying to bring it down to something that was simple and practical and complete and balanced, that was really a challenge. You know, I have a pretty ferocious appetite for reading myself, and while I get a lot from a lot of the books, you know, I didn't want to write a book that was basically a copycat, you know, something that has already been said. I wanted something really unique if I was even going to do it at all. And it wasn't until I really got that four cornerstone concept to organize all this information and make it accessible, that was the challenge. It was an enormous challenge.
Yeah, I can see where that would be, especially for you. It's a challenge for a lot of writers, but especially in your case. So tell me a little bit about your prosperity cycle, the idea of moving from disaster to recovery to prosperity. What is that all about?
I love that question. It's basically a cycle that I've seen repeated over and over again, where people or an organization are prosperous, they're doing really well, and oftentimes prosperity leads to arrogance. And if I'm going to pick one trait on planet Earth that causes disasters, it's arrogance. I see it over and over again. And arrogance leads to a disaster, inevitably, and disaster oftentimes leads to recovery, and recovery leads back to prosperity. So it's this cycle of prosperity, arrogance, disaster, recovery, and around and around. And so the challenge is to first identify what that cycle is, which we've just done. And then the second thing is, how do we break that cycle? And we break that cycle by being teachable. If we're constantly learning and open to improvement and open to new ideas, we break that cycle. And it really comes down to what I call the two great lies. The first great lie, and I hear it over and over again with all these disasters around the world, is I didn't think this would ever happen to me, or it can't happen to me. I'm too big to fail. I'm perfect. I'm flawless. That is the first great lie, and that leads to arrogance. And the second great lie is the polar opposite. It's there's no hope. I can't do any better. I'm doomed. I meet a lot of people in very desperate circumstances that have, you know, some of the people have that attitude of there is no hope. The danger of either great lie is that it crushes any chance of growth. And if we reject the two great lies, then we're growing and we're teachable and we're shunning the tendency that all people have to become arrogant, and we stay out of that cycle and we stay squarely on the prosperity portion and we stay right there.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And, you know, I mean, I think we see that happening now in the world today more than possibly ever in my time that I can recall. So there's never been a better time for your book. It's really critical. So I was just wondering, in trying to get focused and having all this material, how did you keep going if you got kind of stuck at how to simplify it? Maybe you got caught up in overwhelm or whatever may have happened in your writing process. Could you tell us a little bit about what that looked like and how you may have overcome it for any of our listeners who may be writers?
Well, I'm a big fan of Einstein. I have a lot of heroes, but Einstein's certainly one of them. And I noticed, and I talk about it in the book, Under the Me Cornerstone, that Einstein, he would literally lock himself away in his apartment for 2-3 weeks and not speak to anyone, turn off the phone, and go into complete solitude to basically just listen to his own thoughts. And one of the challenges in today's society is that we're so distracted. There's so much information. We all get addicted to digital drugs with our smartphones and TV and this, you know, on and on and on. And distraction is really the enemy of, I think, being a good author. I think we need to really seclude ourselves. And I was very fortunate when I was in Saipan and Guam and the Marianas Islands, where I was supposed to testify in a court case, and the judge said, we'll see you Monday. And all of a sudden, from Friday morning to Monday morning, I had 3 days to myself, which was really a rare treat. And it's so remote, I didn't have any access to call anybody or text anyone. And I was literally stuck on a beach with nothing to do but think. And that's when the answers came to me. So I think that looking at what Einstein did, and all great philosophers, all great religious leaders have, if you look at what they did, they went into seclusion to really think hard, a deep study, a deep thinking period where they can really kind of organize what they want to do. Because up until that point, Vicki, I was really kind of frustrated. I was really battling, you know, this quest of mine to try and find a simple solution to all this information. But when I got into that mode of deep reflective thinking, it came together.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, such a great tip. I know when I was younger, I started a really dynamic business when I was in my mid-20s. And I thought if I threw more energy at it, it would get things done. And it did. But I find now, decades later, that I tend to throw less energy and kind of remove myself a little bit and allow myself some internal time for it to kind of blend if I get stuck or there's some kind of question that I have. And it's such a different way of operating than I did when I was young, and it's so much more effective. I wish I'd discovered it much earlier.
Yeah, me too.
So I was just wondering, you find the time to give back, which is so wonderful. Like, get outside of yourself and volunteer with youth groups and the homeless and at-risk teenagers. And I know you teach in that setting core IQ habits and skills that will lead to their success. So tell us a little bit about the great work you're doing and what they're learning from their time with you.
Well, yes, for years I've been volunteering and went with several groups. Actually, I donate a lot of time to all kinds of groups here in Orange County where I live in Southern California. But one particular group is called the Friendship Shelter here in Laguna Beach where I live. It's a homeless shelter. And I go in there about once a week and I teach exactly what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about me, we, do, be. And it's the same information I use on these cases or speaking with clients and so forth. You know, a lot of times these people are saying, I want to get a job, I want to get a job, I want to get a job. And I say, you know, that is terrific, but there's four cornerstones. It's not just one, there's four. And let's take a look at all four. And number one, the me cornerstone is, what are we doing to build wisdom? And I point out to them to the library and get a book and read it and build your level of intellect and your level of wisdom. And their lights kind of go off and they go, yeah, that's a good idea. And they get books. And then we, you know, building relationships. And, you know, a lot of times the homeless, they've been abused emotionally. People look down on them, you know, out on the street and that kind of thing. And we talk about that very frankly. And I say, you know what? If you have a smile, people are going to smile back. There's this thing called the mirror neutron where what we see, we talk back. And so why don't we stay out of the bars? Why don't we stay out of the slippery places and smile more and do things to build relationships? When there's a conflict, why don't we walk away from it rather than getting pulled into toxicity and drama? And that, by the way, doesn't cost a dime. And then the B cornerstone, it doesn't cost a dime to set a goal. Let's write goals down. What are our goals? Let's get our calendars out and plan out our week. And they'll say, well, I have nothing planned for this week. And I say, well, you have a time to get up. You have a time to go to sleep. You have a time to have lunch. Let's write all those things down and start managing our time and writing down our goals, where we want to be a year from now. And I can tell you, Vicki, I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of stuff in life, but there is no thrill better than working with someone for a few months and having them come in and saying, Dr. Bell, I've really enjoyed this class, but I've graduated, I've gotten sober, I have gotten a job, I've got an apartment, I'm back on my feet, I'm reconnecting with my kids who wouldn't speak with me. To have a little role to play in that person's life is one of the biggest thrills of my life. And my wife Nancy and I, we just went to a wedding, a beautiful wedding in Newport Beach, where one of my students got his whole life back together and he married a beautiful bride and is just soaring ahead. That is the most quintessential high I could ever imagine, is to have a little role to play in that kind of situation.
It's so powerful. I know I did some coaching for women in need who were really in need, you know, the same type of situation, and many of them had no idea how to handle finances or even write a check. And, you know, when you start at that base and then you work with them for a while and you see the change, there's nothing in the world greater than that. I just am so much appreciation and admiration for the work that you're doing. It's really wonderful.
Well, thanks. It's something that I feel selfish because I get more out of the experience than I think they get from me, quite honestly. And I took my cues from Denise Brown, the sister of Nicole Brown Simpson with the whole O.J. Simpson mess. And Denise and I are friends, and I was actually on her board of directors where she was helping battered women, you know, get back on her feet. And I saw how much she enjoyed, you know, channeling her grief from losing her sister into something very, very productive. I have a lot of admiration for Denise. So I give other people credit for really kind of turning me on to this idea of service to people who are less fortunate. But I'll tell you, it's the best buzz out there. It's the best high you can possibly get in life.
Yeah, and you know, when I first started getting involved in this, and I was heavily involved for about 4 or 5 years, I didn't think I would have anything in common with the women that I was working with because, you know, I have had a really great life with very, very little trauma, you know.
Yeah.
Leave It to Beaver upbringing and, you know, I mean, and I thought, well, I don't know what I'll have in common with them. And I found, you know, their needs are human needs. I had everything in the world in common with them. They were worried about their families. They're worried about their children. There were so many things. There's so many commonalities, just woman to woman, that it really kind of surprised me.
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear on that, Vicki. I have the exact same feeling. Honestly, I'm ashamed to say it, but it's true. But to be authentic, I would confess that I used to be really afraid of homeless people. And I would, you know, I'm even more embarrassed to say that I would have negative thoughts, you know, and judgmental thoughts. But I'm happy to say that I've corrected course and that I've come to the same realization you have. They are people. They have the same range of human emotions that you or I have. And I also had an idyllic, you know, childhood growing up, but I've really learned a lot from it. And I would recommend to anybody to help out somebody, you know, whether it's homeless or battered women or anybody, you know, the helper's high is a very real endorphin, and it generates a very authentic buzz that can't be compared to anything else.
That is so true. And again, thank you so much for the amazing contribution you're making on so many levels with your life's work, with the work that you're doing with these people that are getting back on their feet, and then for writing this amazing gift of a book that, you know, again, has gone number one international bestseller. So if you were to look at the body of work you've done and the work that you're planning, I know you're planning two more books and we're thrilled to be a part of helping you with those. I was wondering if you were almost looking at it, it may be way too early for this, but if you were almost looking at it like a legacy, like the contribution you would like to make to the world, what would that look like for you?
I think that my contribution would be the me, we, do, be concept, because it is so powerful, it is so effective, and while a lot of people have touched on points here and there with it, bringing it down to something that you can teach a five-year-old kid and create that sense of foundational balance is just very, very powerful. Now, we can literally write, you know, in fact, you can take the entire Library of Congress and put it into those four cornerstones. They'll all fit neatly within me, we, do, be. That's the power of it. So we can spend a lifetime or more, you know, discussing each of the four cornerstones. But having those four cornerstones really gives us a solid foundational place to start with in really addressing, you know, what things look like. Then, of course, I want to add to the conversation in terms of, you know, my unique perspective working on these disasters and so forth. But there's, of course, a lot of great perspectives that I admire that I look at to also fill in the details. But I think if there's one thing that I'm going to be, you know, real pleased with that came out of this whole experience is essentially that simple but powerful, effective, balanced four cornerstone concept.
I just so love that, and I love the book, and I know that everyone can find the book on Amazon, but if they wanted to learn more about you and connect with you, do you have a website?
Yes, richhabits.com, and what I'm going to be doing is we're doing sociological research constantly. In the office that I have, we have a team of very talented researchers, and we're always looking at specifically, you know, individual habits like waving at your neighbors or what kind of foods you eat or, you know, are you having dinner with the family or are you running out to fast food a lot? We're looking at all these different kinds of day-to-day habits, and we're correlating them scientifically with different measures of success. And, of course, it's not just making money. We do look at that, but we also look at levels of happiness, levels of education, so on and so forth. And we're scientifically correlating different habits with these benefits. And we put all this information online for free. I do it, honestly, because I've got enough money and I enjoy doing it. And so if people go to richhabits.com, they can constantly get new, more and more information that I think is fascinating.
I think so, too, no question. And that's so generous, again, of offering that up. And for those of you as well who would like to buy the book, and I would highly recommend it, go to Amazon. It's Rich Habits, Rich Life, The Four Cornerstones of All Great Pursuits. Thank you so much, Dr. Randall Bell, for being with us today. It has just been such a pleasure and so informative. And, again, the generosity of your time and goodness in the world is so appreciated.
Thank you so much, Vicki. I appreciate everything that you're doing as well.
And for those of you out there who would like to learn more about Expert Insights Publishing, our award-winning books and magazines, bestsellers, as well as our global communities and broadcasts, you can find us at geteei.com. That's geteei.com. And everyone have a fabulous week. Thanks for being here.